Hey, welcome to Skin in the Game, and proud to announce that Holiday Valley Ski Resort in Ellicottville, New York, has joined us as a sponsor of Skin in the Game. Winter has arrived, and Holiday Valley is open. Kick off the ski season where the excitement starts. Learn more at holidayvalley.com. This is your host, John Simperman, with my co-host,
Tim Olshai. And John, well, we're bringing along a few friends this
week.
Well,
you know, as we're heading towards the end of 2025, we did want to revisit a phenomenal interview we had with Troy Vincent and his role, obviously, with the National Football League and the importance of what he's doing to develop flag football, both men and women here in the United States. But I also thought it would be a good time to look at what our friends at Sports Business Journal recently announced is their most influential 125 executives in the business of sports.
Yeah, John, this is a list that came out earlier this month from Sports Business Journal. And for those of you who aren't familiar, it is the premier business-to-business publication in the sports industry. If you are in the sports business, you're reading Sports Business Journal. And so to be on this list, it's called the Influence 125, the 125 most influential people in sports over the last 25 years, it's a big, big deal. And so, John, I brought along a friend this week to talk about this. So, John, I'm going to introduce you to Josh Barnett, the Managing Director of Editorial for Sports Business Journal, my former colleague at the Buffalo News, where he was the Executive Sports Editor. He was also that for the Philadelphia Daily News, and he was an Assistant Managing Editor at USA Today. So, influential guy in sports media. Josh, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate the introduction.
John was wondering if you made the 125. You're 126. You just missed the cut.
The Skin in the Game team is not yet on your list. But before we get into who's on the list, I guess the good question would be, what was the inspiration for the timing and unveiling of the top 125 most important people in the business of sports?
So SBJ has done an annual most influential list since 2004. So it's 21 years of annual lists. And with coming up on the 25 years in the new century, we thought it might be a time to look at sort of a longer view on people who've had been influential over the time period as opposed to necessarily in a particular year. And it created a really interesting dynamic because one of the questions we had in the room was there were certainly people who were influential for relatively short windows or for particular events or occurrences, but then we had to take the step back and say over 25 years, how much of that 25 years was the person relevant, influential, powerful in the sports business? Just from a number standpoint, since this thing was all about numbers, the number of people who have been on the 21 previous most influential annual list is actually 379. In the process of conversation, we probably added about 200 more names before we even went through the process of starting to trim it down. As we got closer and closer, the decisions got harder and harder in terms of where the cutoff should be and really what is the definition of influence. A lot of our conversations were based on just that very question. What are we trying to say by putting somebody in the most influential list?
And, yeah, how'd you like to be in the room for that discussion?
Well,
series of discussions.
Yeah. No, and I'm looking at the list, and we'll get into some of the names. You know, you see there's obviously business executives, there's business owners, media influencers, meaning, you know, sports on the sports side, programming side. And then interesting, there's even a few former professional athletes that have broke into the list. You know, I guess, Josh, the question is, did you rank these 1 through 25, or is it, here's our 125 with no special treatment for what number do you sit at?
Yeah, no, we opted against ranking them, I think, in part because they're not all the same in terms of what they do. There's so many different sectors of the industry that are accounted for. It's really hard to come up with a way to compare somebody who's in marketing and somebody who's a team owner and somebody who's the president of ESPN and somebody who's an architect at Populous. They have enough commonality among them in order to be able to try to compare them. So we opted for the alphabetical option.
So Josh, John and I are looking through the list right here that you you sent over. So we're recording this on the day that the list came out. And there's some names, you know, I think we all know we're going to be there in no particular order. LeBron James, Phil Knight, the founder of Nike, jumps out to me. Roger Goodell, the longtime commissioner of the NFL. Gary Bettman, the longtime commissioner of the National Hockey League. I'm not asking for a number here, but you know, how much of the list, I mean, if you had to guesstimate, what percentage of the list were pretty much no-brainers? You knew they were going to be there.
So there are four people who have actually appeared on all 21 lists in SBJ history. Goodell, Bettman, Robert Kraft, and Jerry Jones. And then we started counting down from there. I'd say maybe 75, 70, somewhere in that range. We felt pretty good where there wasn't a lot of debate. I think one of the things, and my boss, Abe Madcore, our publisher, wrote about this in his column, is trying to figure out how do athletes and coaches belong on this list? That was a question we had. Do folks with international sports belong on this list? Someone like Thomas Bach is on the list because obviously, as the former head of the IOC, because obviously Americans or North Americans are involved in those events. But how much of a sphere of international influence did we want to have? You know, we had a real big debate about on-air personalities. Does Bob Costas belong on this list? Does Al Michaels belong on this list? Does Joe Buck or Jim Lampley belong on this list? And so that's really where it kind of got down to the brass tacks of it all from a philosophy standpoint. I think we all recognize, you know, the team owners in the major leagues and the commissioners in the major leagues. But once it got past sort of those names, you know, those names are familiar to us because of what we do, but probably not necessarily familiar to everybody who's either more of a fan or in different parts of the industry.
Well, I've noticed there's a couple names, too, that maybe have kind of emerged over the last five or so years that may not have been backdating 20 years. But I look at a David Blitzer, for example, or a Josh Harris. You know, their impact on professional sports is become really pronounced in more so, what, the last 5 years?
I mean, I think with Harris, he obviously owned the 76ers in the early 2010s when I was the sports editor there. And so he's obviously had a more pronounced impact as his empire, if you will, has expanded. And obviously, you know, coming from Apollo, his investment firm. But I think it's really been an interesting thing in terms of what sectors people in, right? Like we're also, David Blitzer, we're seeing a significant investment in youth sports recently, along with the various elements of Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment that he and Josh owned together as in the pro space. So I think that was part of it as well, trying to figure out, again, like I said, how much influence the person had over the time period. I mean, the one name that came up a bunch was Caitlin Clark, because Caitlin Clark, you know, 2 years at Indiana and let's call it 2 years at Iowa is a prominent entity. That's only 4 years of the group. Should she be on the list? If we did this list 5 years from now and her trajectory continues, she might be a no-brainer.
Sure, sure. Well, for our listeners in Toronto, Buffalo region, where we record Skin in the Game, I think a couple names that are kind of tied regionally is Jeremy Jacobs Sr., the chairman of Delaware North Companies, is very influential, especially when it comes to the National Hockey League. And I also noticed my former boss, Tim Lywicki, and I think what he did with Maple Leaf Sports years back was also probably added to his legacy as a sports executive.
Yeah, no question. You know, the number of accomplishments and sort of the range of accomplishments across the list are really, really impressive. And, you know, the idea of some of the names that didn't make it or some of the names were sort of in our final cuts is an impressive group. The biggest thing we did try to do, though, was beyond just our own knowledge of the subjects, we made a lot of phone calls and sent a lot of emails and had a lot of conversations with people around the sports business industry to get a sense of whether our opinions of certain folks matched their opinions as to whether people belong on the list. I know I was in a lot of conversations and the person on the other side would say, come on, what did that person do to be so influential? You know, and you just kind of have to sort of hash it through.
Josh, once you guys started making those phone calls and word got out that you and Abe and the crew at Sports Business Journal was putting together this list. Did you start hearing from people? Were they lobbying you? Were there PR people lobbying you? Were people trying to land a spot on this list?
So once it got out what we were working on, we definitely did start to hear from some folks. And frankly, we let the people who were on the list know in advance that they were on the list a few weeks ago, in part because we needed their contributions to do the write-ups about them and do some reporting on them and photography and whatnot. And so it became a little bit of where people who were on the list, even though we asked them to keep it confidential, it started to squeak out that, you know, they were talking to us and maybe their colleague wasn't, or their whomever that they had a relationship with wasn't. And so, there definitely is an element of that. But, you know, there's an element of that really in all the things that we do, right? You know, 40 under 40, and new voices under 30, power players, a lot of the really big signature SBJ packages are lists of these kind that honor folks. The biggest difference here was, though, that there wasn't a nominating process where you nominated yourself, whereas in 40 under 40 and some of our other programs, you put a submission forward.
You know, there's, I think one, looking at the list here, I think one and only one entry that's not an actual person. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but the one I'm looking at here is Twitter, or, well, X now. So talk about Twitter / X landing on the list.
So I was a huge advocate for that. I also think the iPhone should be on the list, but I was outvoted on that. But Twitter is such a significant element, number one, as a tool for reporters to disseminate information. It's become the second screen experience for so many people who watch sports. The part that you might not think about is how many people have jobs as social media coordinators for teams and leagues and race teams and PR companies and marketing firms and manufacturers. It's spawned thousands and thousands of jobs in the industry. The hard part was figuring out who is the person, right? We were like, does Jack Dorsey belong on this list? Kind of, because he's the brainchild behind Twitter. There are a couple other executives in the Twitter universe who have had significant impact. We eventually just decided that it was going to be too hard to figure out a person. And we thought it was kind of funny that where the headshot would be for the person, we would just put the little bird thing.
I like it. I like it.
Well, to your point too, not only that, but it's also spawned specific brands for each player, right? I mean, each of these players have sure. become their own brands because now they have their personal voice. So it's really influenced the perception and the personality of the players as well.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the athletes that are on this, it's very few athletes, but certainly they're folks who have leveraged all sorts of assets, including social media, to enhance their brand. You know, Tiger, LeBron, Serena, Peyton Manning.
So Josh, for people out there who aren't Sports Business Journal subscribers, but maybe they're future ones and they want to check out the list, sportsbusinessjournal.com. Do you have the full list up there available for people to see?
Yep, sportsbusinessjournal.com/influence125, the numbers, influence125. That'll take you to our landing page, which has bios, explainers, photos, some video, all kinds of good stuff.
Again, SBJ is written for people in the industry, but I guarantee you it's an interesting read for anybody. And, you know, John, when you came to me and talked to me about starting this show, Skin in the Game, and looking at how sports impacts everybody's life, looking at this list here, I'm just seeing a bunch of names, and in one case, a company, Twitter, that have impacted the lives of pretty much, I'd be hard pressed to find somebody that it hasn't. I'll put it that way.
Absolutely.
Everybody out there, whether they're sports fans or not.
And Josh, Tim and I are also lobbying for at least the 135 influential list for us here on Skin in the Game.
We're going to keep working toward it.
Hey, all right. Well, I'll mark that down to my notes just to be sure.
Please do.
Hey, Josh, thanks for joining us here on Skin in the Game. And then for our listeners, please stay tuned for one of our most influential interviews of the past year. That with a former Buffalo Bill and current Executive Vice President of the National Football League, Troy Vincent.
Coming up next.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley was voted the #4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. Holiday Valley features slopeside lodging, walk to the lift, ski all day, relax all night. Holiday Valley has terrain and activities for all ages. There's fun for the whole family. Less driving, more skiing, more memories. More information at holidayvalley.com.
You're listening to an encore episode of Skin in the Game with Troy Vincent, Executive Vice President of Football Operations for the NFL. Welcome, Troy Vincent. So happy to have you.
Thanks for having me on this brisk winter day here in New York.
Hey, I've got to ask you, Troy, as Executive VP of Football Operations, you know, we know you are in charge of all things football for the NFL. How does the excitement of the playoff season that we're in the midst of now compare to you from, you know, the league front office as compared to when you were a player heading into the postseason?
It's actually pretty much the same feel. As a player, the mindset was always, we got a chance. Doesn't matter if it's a home, if whether we're home, we're divisional winners or not. If I'm in the mix, we got a shot. Now for us, in my current role, you always have to plan. And because of the most recent success, say the last 5-6 years, there was going to be a game played in Buffalo during this time. You're going to have snow? Not only have snow, how deep is it?
Troy, it's John Simperman here. Thank you for joining us here today. You brought up the snow in Buffalo, and I guess from a league perspective, you know, we've heard and we talk a lot about how the snow of Buffalo is part of the kind of the mystique of Buffalo, and sometimes translates into even more viewership because it's so, you know, novel.
Both teams have to play in it. So that was my perspective when I was with the Dolphins and have to travel up to Buffalo. You got to travel south. It's going to be 110 degrees. Everyone is feeling the heat. Well, when you come to Buffalo, you got winds. You got, you know, sometimes you got rain. And then the snow, it is what it is. So you got to deal with it. If you're dealing with it every day, which we did it, you're practicing in it, even though you come inside. But for the most part, you stay outside just to get used to the elements. And as we would say, when I was with Buffalo, that's somebody else's problem. They want to think about the snow and how much is coming down and so on and so forth. That's their problem. We deal with this every single day. So I do believe there is a slight advantage mentally going into the game because you're dealing with those elements every single day.
Right. You might have been out earlier in the day shoveling your driveway, right? So you're in the elements.
Now, the one thing that we have to, and maybe you can share this with the audience, please, no snowballs. No snowballs to the opposing team. Let's keep it, as we would say, got to be professional at all times. The people of Western New York and in the Buffalo area, the Aurora area, the Niagara, hey, we're great people. We're great fans. Just keep the snowballs if there's snow in the stadium. No snowballs to the opponent.
I think we're pretty good about that in Buffalo, not to. And I'd have to think back. I guess maybe we'll.
It's funny.
We'll look for the next snow.
Well, there's probably less snowballs and I guess less frustration when the team's doing very well.
That's an excellent point. Why would you be throwing snowballs when Josh Allen's throwing touchdowns? I guess we're good there. That's why I haven't seen it. Hey, Troy, I'm going to switch gears with you here and talk to you about something that I know is so close to your heart. You and I connected a couple of years ago on this topic, and that is flag football, which has been growing so explosively. Troy, you've been in charge of, when I said before, all things football for the NFL. That includes flag football as a youth sport, a collegiate sport, or at least advocating it for it to become that, and now as an Olympic sport. And we can dig into all of those things, but let's start broad. Why is the NFL and why are you so excited about flag football?
It's an opportunity. When COVID hit, Tim, in full transparency, each one of us in the sports industry and just the overall industry, society as a whole, things were changing. And when we were looking at who's playing our sport, who's not playing, what other alternatives do we have based off of some of the things that were happening with space and people being in a certain amount of people being in an area. Could this be a version of the sport that we just really haven't tapped into? And it was like flag, less people. You don't need a whole lot of space. And frankly, it went to, you look at the numbers, you start digging through the numbers, it was young ladies. And how do we have a version of our sport that is One, affordable. Two, accessible. Three, all-inclusive. And just thinking about the opportunities that the game presented to me and my colleagues and my teammates, the game of football has done more for me than I can ever do for it. Why not that be present, or that opportunity be presented to all, not gender-based? And that's kind of how we got there, Tim. And then we began, because flag or 7-on-7, it's been around for a long time. We just, men, we just didn't accept, man, should young ladies play? But when you think about, again, affordability, accessibility, and all-inclusive, when we talk about football for all, it really does meet that, when that language, that everyone has an opportunity and there's a space in football for all people.
Troy, that's great. I really commend the league on this. In a smaller way, it reminds me, I formerly ran the marketing for the Los Angeles Kings. So we're trying to sell hockey in Los Angeles, and we really tied into street hockey and roller hockey just to give people of different backgrounds the opportunity to play the game. And it worked out there. I guess my question is, what was that one moment or one catalyst that said, we really need to dive into flag football? And, you know, not to date myself, but I was playing flag football in the schoolyard 40 years ago. So it's been around. But what was that catalyst that we really said, let's adopt this and bring it in the NFL tent?
So there were many factors. One, we just saw interest. You start talking about having a global footprint. How do you introduce a sport and your challenger sport outside of the United States and Canada? So you are competing against someone who has absolutely no idea what American football is. This is a really basic way to introduce someone to the game. And then, Tim, I would just say for myself personally, you know, you're going around the country. My visit to St. Mary, sitting down like it was a focus group, actually listening to the students and the parents, it was like, wow. There was my perception of, man, ladies, young girls should play, young ladies should play. This should become all states should sanction. Man, this should be great at the, offer scholarship at the collegiate level. It was that moment when I visit St. Mary's, when the students are saying, nope, we don't want any different rules. Nope, we want uniforms that identify with us. They talked about body shapes. When I got the full breath of the parent and the student, it allowed me to come back here to New York and literally share that experience with my colleagues here. Flag Football United. Okay, now I'm going factory direct. I'm literally speaking to the future of this game. And I can come back and now let's build it based off of what the young ladies think is best for them as we grow the great sport of flag football.
And I can tell you here in Buffalo and at Mount St. Mary Academy, that experience remains just a transformational one for all the young women involved. Back in the fall of 2022, a young woman from Mount St. Mary Academy, who was a ninth grader at the time, her name is Sydney Yost, wrote you a letter. It began with, "Dear Mr. Vincent, my name is Sydney Yost. I'm a freshman here at Mount St. Mary Academy. As an athlete and a woman, I feel it's important to establish a flag football league for high school females." She went on to tell you about the other sports she's played, about her family's love for the Buffalo Bills, about their family tradition, about going outside at halftime to play catch, you know, in the middle of the Bills games. She mentioned that, you know, a great member of your staff, your senior communications advisor, Kathleen Neville, who is a Western New Yorker, had come in to her class at Mount St. Mary Academy to talk about flag football. And she capped off her letter to you by saying, "Thank you for taking time to read this. I would appreciate any feedback you have on flag football as an opportunity for women in high school." You didn't just give her feedback. You called me up and called Kathleen up and said, I'm coming to the school.
And Tim, with that, really became our blueprint. And I would just say, what Kylie, Sydney, and Haley, it was the three young ladies. I get a lot of fan mail. And obviously, people know my love and affinity for the Buffalo Bills, in particular, the Wilson family, and what the community means to me. When I get mail from that particular region, I just opened it. How could you not reply? But it was that moment that kind of, when I finished that day, John, I was able to, hey, Commissioner, hey, staff, here is the blueprint. Here's the roadmap. Because those young ladies were speaking for every young freshman and sophomore, young American women, not just domestically here, frankly, they were speaking for women across the globe. And what was so special there, I had a good population of young girls, but the parent input was really, really invaluable because you got to speak to the parent. How do you introduce this? And they start talking about, you put it in newsletters and, you know, starting the third and fifth grade, like, okay, they were on it. And now when you look at it, where it's grown, there's 3.1 million young student athletes participating in flag football. 13 states have sanctioned girls flag football to date. More than 500,000 girls under the age of 17 now play organized flag. Nearly 43,000 girls have competed with their high school teams. That's 105% increase from the previous year. It is absolutely exploding. They're competitive. They're highly skilled. They show their personalities. Last year at the championships in Canton, Ohio, the viewership came from the young ladies, not the boys. It was the girls that carried viewership. I mean, I'm pumped up. Like I love seeing them just go at it. It gives my granddaughters an opportunity for the future.
It's incredible what's happening. And Troy, correct me if I'm wrong, but these are varsity high school teams.
Absolutely.
That's yes, tremendous. Yep.
Correct. Correct. And now when we look at the ecosystem, you got club play, you got rec play, but to organize it where it's a sanctioned varsity sport, like boys basketball, boys football, wrestling, volleyball, and we're just seeing that momentum. We look at the collegiate level. You know, you got almost 50 schools offering scholarships. Between now and the Olympics, we'll have an NCAA championship tournament for girls flag.
Let's talk about the Olympics, too. I was about to say, Troy, how big a deal is it to have flag football be part of the Olympics? I already know it's a massive deal, but when that happened, how did it feel?
One, being part of the LA 28, that planning. When you think about the Olympics being the pinnacle of any athlete's resume, to say that I'm a gold medalist, to say that I can represent my country, when we think about the dream team of the NBA, we think about our women's soccer team, you know, volleyball team, swimming, man, it's about representing your country. LA 28, Brisbane, talk about aspiration and what can young women and families look forward to? Why am I training? Why am I putting in this time and efforts? Well, mom, I want to make the varsity team. Or mom, dad, I got an opportunity to earn a scholarship to play college ball. I'm still training. Why? Because there's a professional women's flag league coming. Better than that, I could rep the United States of America or my country, China, Australia, in the LA 28 Olympics or beyond. That's phenomenal.
How is the makeup of the team selection going to occur?
USA Football, that's our partner, IFAF, International Federation of American Football. We've had a lot of active players talk about they want to participate. Still working with the Players Association in the club membership on making that happen. So that's still work in progress. But the guys want to rep their countries. The young ladies want to rep their countries. Well, there'll be tryouts, regionals to formalize a team. But I think many people would be surprised of the number of athletes from different parts of the world playing professional football here in the NFL. That's a process through USA Football. Again, this is a hope. Potentially Josh is throwing that ball representing the United States of America. Maybe Patrick Mahomes is representing the United States of America. Or Coleman. Maybe he thinks that he can go out and be a wide receiver for the Olympic team. Again, that's a little bit about the process.
Yeah, well, that's exciting, and I think the road to the games is going to be just as much fun as the games itself.
I got to tell you, seeing Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes on the same team in a high-stakes competition, that might be kind of fun. Seriously, though, congratulations on everything you did, which was a lot. As a flag football coach, I have a bunch of young athletes who are eyeing that as a possibility, too, so that's got to feel good.
This has been a collective, a true team effort. That's every coach, that's every parent around the globe. Like, hey, let's try it. Let's give it a try.
One of the bits of feedback I've heard is that it can be difficult to know where or how to fit flag football into the offerings that they already have. And they're sometimes concerned, I think often concerned, that they might lose athletes from other sports if they offer a flag team. What are your thoughts on how flag fits in amongst other sports that kids are already playing?
We have heard that as we travel around and you get feedback from whether it's parents or in particular athletic directors. And then sometimes you get coaches that have a view or an opinion around this potentially could hurt our young women or ostracize other sports. We haven't seen that happen often. The parents gonna make a decision, the kids gonna make a decision. And one here at the National Football League, in particular myself, I was one that played multiple sports. So we recommend that young ladies and young men play multiple sports, try it. We think there's a lot of transferable skills from one sport to another. We've heard this time and time again, as we've traveled around the country, that spring, summertime is the right time. So it doesn't conflict with some of those winter sports, really doesn't conflict with track and some of those other spring sports, but it shouldn't stop us from offering. We got to keep kids active.
First of all, you're absolutely right. Give the kids the choice. And I personally believe multi-sport athletes have better outcomes. Mm. But it's interesting when you look at the men's side, and I come from a little bit of a rugby background, and American football has taken a lot of the best athletes who would have played men's soccer or would have played men's rugby. And, you know, we can't and haven't really competed on the men's side nationally. But on the flip side is, you know, our best female athletes historically, they really migrated to women's soccer. And you can see what they've done on a national level. A spring window for flag football, I think, then does not directly compete with where we've been an international powerhouse is in women's soccer.
Yes, sir. This is great because when you think about our discussion here, we're not saying this when it comes to men's offerings that we're ostracizing, that we're cutting off. But now we get to the conversation around women. Now we want to set quote unquote barriers of, well, we don't want to do this. We don't want to offer this. We're not saying that same thing for young boys. We give them, frankly, the entire menu for the parents and for the boys to decide. Not only was this the athlete in the past, but I was a parent going from a soccer practice to a rugby practice to a basketball skill thing late at night, like in the what we call the soccer van. And man, I got soccer equipment, I got football equipment, I got the T-ball equipment. You know, you're just making it work. The parents make it work. Why? Because it's the best thing for our kids, keeping them active.
Yeah, it's so funny. We had Dr. Bridget Nyland from Niagara University on Skin in the Game a few months back, and she gave the best line is, you know, your goal with your kids should be, their goal should not be to play in a pro league, but to play in a bar league. So give them as many give them as many opportunities, I'm preaching to the choir here, but the life skills that you learn through these activities.
And so think about not only the life skills, but it gives you time as a parent, which, you know, is precious time. You don't have a whole lot, but man, you get them weekends and you're just traveling like, okay, he got a wrestling match, such and such. You're going to drop, you know, Teron off here. Troy Jr. is going to go here. Desiree is going to go here. And it gives you time in the car. Okay, you got to shift. Take the soccer cleats off. Again, let's just open up the menu of sport and sport offerings, and flag is the one that we're focusing here, to all young ladies.
Hey, Troy, speaking of the skills, the life lessons, the leadership lessons that one can learn from sports, to me, you're a great example of it, and not only at the youth and collegiate level, but at the pro level. I've got to think that while you were playing in the NFL, you were getting ready for life afterward, because after you retired, you went on to become the Players Union president and the senior VP of player engagement for the NFL, which I know among your responsibilities there was helping guys who are in the league get ready for life afterward. And now you're running all of football for the National Football League. What did you do as a player to position yourself for a fruitful, fulfilling life afterward?
Investing in myself. It's being intentional about what you want out of life. And a choice to invest in myself. Where am I going to spend my time? Who am I going to spend my time with? Understanding that sport is a journey, is an experience. As a player, you can't spend the rest of your life participating in the sport. There's a shelf life to the body as you participate. And it was just being intentional in college, doing internships as a pro from my first year in Miami to my 15th year. At the conclusion of my playing experience, I don't say career, playing experience. Where am I spending time during the off season? Who am I spending time with? Am I learning the skills that are transferable when I get into my new normal, which is normal society? The team sports in particular, they teach you so much about communication, trust, integrity. All of those things are transferable into all walks of life.
And Troy, were there coaches or veteran players, or were there mentors that helped you through that process?
John, absolutely. Beginning with my grandparents who raised me with my mother, my godparents, James and Linda Bodley. And then there was a coach that really, really was, I would say, one of the most influential individuals in my life outside of my parents, was Coach Jim Dundella. I didn't play high school football. I went out my senior year. But he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. Then I went on to college under Coach Barry Alvarez and learned about integrity and really about team and how team and integrity, all of those things, and sportsmanship and the respect of the game. And then I move on. My first professional head coach was Don Shula. Then I move on to Ray Rhodes, Andy Reid. I had Hall of Fame coaches throughout my career. At each one of those stops, I took a little bit from each coach and says, man, I can apply this as a father. I can apply this as a husband. I can apply this as a coach. And all of those things today, it allows me to be, as I hope that my colleagues would say this, an effective leader. J.B. Brown was the first individual who embraced me as a Miami Dolphin. Brian Cox. In each one of my stops, there was an individual, a veteran, that took me up underneath their wing, that I was able to learn some things and said, I can apply that. That works in my life's toolbox.
That's amazing. It just seems, Troy, that you hit the nail on the head. Surround yourself around the right people, right? The people that you want to aspire to grow to be like or with. It's just awesome that you now can be the one mentoring that next generation of player.
Through my athletic journey, there's some principles I picked up in leadership, like humility, honor, honesty, and the hunger to be great. And then through that journey also, if you don't mind me sharing, Tim and John, I have my non-negotiables. And that's the one thing that I picked up from really Coach Shula and Coach Alvarez, very, very similar. It's not where you're from, it's where you're at. Coach Alvarez used to call me, hey, man, you got to have some non-negotiables. And I have four non-negotiables. My walk with Jesus Christ is a non-negotiable. That shows up everywhere I show up. Number two, my commitment to my family. Number three, my stance on violence against young girls and women. That's a non-negotiable for me. And then lastly, I don't negotiate with lazy people. Those are some things that I picked up along the way when I have an opportunity to mentor someone. Leading the group that I have the opportunity to lead today under Commissioner Goodell's guidance and leadership, Ralph Wilson, my professional career changed in my time in Buffalo. Mr. Wilson spent time with me every single week about business, about the game, about the importance of this revenue sharing model, why it works, things that we can't negotiate away as a sport. So I'm indebted to the game of football, and in particular, professional football.
Troy, how did that come about, where Mr. Wilson was sitting down with you or chatting with you on a weekly basis about the business?
So John Guy was there, and Modrak were those are some of the names that were part of the organization that brought me in. I was the president of the union at the time. Mr. Wilson and I, we had engaged just due to my service position as a president. And he used to just come downstairs and we used to talk. And it was just really good conversation. And then the conversation turns into every Friday, he's strolling out on the field with the golf cart saying, "Hey, well, let's go grab a tuna melt." And everyone knows that was his favorite sandwich, the tuna melt. Every Friday at practice, get on the golf cart, pull on the field, and say, "Hey, Troy, it's time to go." Literally, I would walk off the practice field, quickly shower up, and we drive around. He had, Ford Taurus, that he would drive around, go around the corner, tune him out, chips. And we talk about when he purchased a team, how that came about, his time at UVA. It was a fascinating experience for myself. I'm indebted to the city of Buffalo, personally and professionally.
Well, it sounds like he also looked forward to those conversations.
I think he did. It was wonderful.
Troy, you brought up your advocacy for prevention of domestic and gender-based violence, and you're well known for that. Anybody who's followed your career journey, your life journey, knows your story and your willingness to talk about it and your willingness to encourage everybody. And I think it's fair to say, particularly men, to step up and do their part. A couple of years ago, you founded the Vincent Commission at Niagara University to conduct a ground study on gender-based violence and focusing on how young men perceive domestic and gender-based violence, particularly on college campuses. Tell us a little bit about how that came to be and what you're learning and where you hope it heads.
So after being in the space 30 years in the space of what role do myself personally play, our family play, in ending, not stopping, but ending this vicious cycle of gender-based violence. And after, we're now 30 years into it, it's just like, man, this data, it hasn't changed. What's a different approach? And how do I engage with young men around this topic? What am I missing? So we felt like we needed a more quantitative, qualitative approach, an academic approach with studying what do men, young men know? What is their understanding around gender-based violence? And what are we hoping to get out of the commission? That potentially we could find and recommend best practices for prevention and educational approaches and policy changes regarding domestic and gender-based violence. That is at the core of what we're trying to accomplish with this study. My wife is a survivor. My daughter is a survivor. My son is a survivor. And I was affected. I'm in that statistic. Data says I'm 2 times as likely because I saw and experiences to be an abuser, if you witnessed that. So my family has been, we would say our experiences here, we want to be part of the solution. And now my wife's at a place, my daughter's at a place, my son's at a place where we collectively, as a family, we want to do more. We've made a lifetime commitment in this particular area. Dr. Ireland at Niagara and Father Mark, we made a commitment to see if we can come up with some solutions and some best practices and potentially some policy changes that would allow us to end gender-based violence.
As we sit here and think about your accomplishments as an athlete and as a sports executive, it's really bigger than all of that, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about games, but really the games that people watch for entertainment and joy really position you and other people who've had your experiences to go out and make a much bigger impact, don't they?
Well, that's what it's all about. we talk about athletes, but if every athlete could truly realize that they have a platform, that you have the ability to influence and to make a difference in your local community, in your locker rooms, just by how you show up and who you're showing up for. And that's the beauty of service.
We thank you for that work. We thank you for making the game of football accessible to so many. And I think, you know, John and I both have daughters. You know, we appreciate the impact that your work is having on people close to us and so many others.
Tim, if you wouldn't mind, and both for you and John, as you think about your daughters, and I'm going to go back, pivot back to a little bit more around the commission and why the work is so important, in particular for we as men, as you think about your daughters and hopefully your granddaughters, your nieces, when we think about data, and this is what is really problematic for myself. I can't speak about what's happening globally, but just here in the United States, domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women. It's the leading cause of injury to women, more than car accidents, muggings, and rape combined. So when we start thinking about that, put that in context. A woman is assaulted and beaten here in our country every 9 seconds. Every 9 seconds. What does our silence imply when we see or we hear these things? One in every three women is physically abused by her partner during her lifetime. We shouldn't be accepting that. That's unacceptable. 10 million, I was one of those 10 million children, witnessed some form of domestic violence every year. And the effects that has on you, both short and long term, psychologically, it affects you for the rest of your life. One in every five teenage girls say that her boyfriend has threatened her with violence or self-harm if she presented him with a breakup. That should be unacceptable. Every day, more than three women are murdered by their husband or boyfriends. So we got so much work to do here in this particular area, and it affects all of us. So I thank you all for one and giving me the opportunity to share a little bit about the why in the Vincent Commission. But this is why, because this hasn't changed in decades. So we just got a lot of work to do. And I just challenge all men to ask yourself, what does your silence actually imply?
When the Vincent Commission releases its findings, its recommendations, we would love to invite you back. And you know, I'm looking at John across the studio here. John, I think this might be an opportunity to have Troy and some others who can speak up and speak out on this and talk about. Troy, you're talking about solutions here, right? Solutions and people stepping up and doing the right thing and doing it now and sticking with it and breaking that silence and being, you know, forward with it.
And to Troy's point, you know, these athletes have this platform, you know, to do some real good. You know, they have a voice. So I think Troy, spot on with, you know, really encouraging athletes from high school on up to use this platform, to use their voice to do some real, real good here. Well, I want to thank you, Troy, for your contributions, your continued contributions to the sport. More importantly, contributions to helping build life skills for young athletes. And I, for one, am all for football for all. That is a great theme, and I think it's actually more than a slogan. It's the real deal.
Well, thank you. This has been a wonderful conversation. It made my day.
Ours
and
too.
I love starting off with positive vibes. And Tim and John, you provided that for me this morning.
All right. Well, it's still early. We're hoping by the end of the day we were still the highlight. But
and Troy, hey, we hope to see you in Buffalo soon.
Yes. All right. I accept your invite.
Thank you, Troy. Awesome.
Thank
awesome.
You.
Thank hey, have
you.
A good one, Troy.
Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Support for BTPM comes from our members and from Holiday Valley. Holiday Valley was voted the number 4 resort in the East by Ski Magazine readers. More snowmaking, more lifts, more ways to play. Holiday Valley is a mix of exciting terrain on an independent mountain that brings out your best. From the first chair to the last run, Holiday Valley is what winter was made for. Holiday Valley, your winter done right. More information at holidayvalley.com.
You're listening to an encore episode of Skin in the Game with Troy Vincent, Executive Vice President of Football Operations for the NFL.
Tim, I want to thank you for bringing Troy Vincent to the show. What an accomplished guy, and really what he's done for the game, and in some small way, what he's done here for the region is just incredible.
And I think how he uses his platform, he's able to capitalize on the game of football to affect so many people in ways that go far beyond a sport. When the NFL, and this is a Troy Vincent thing, put its weight behind flag football exploded.
Just brilliant, because more people can be engaged in the game and play the game. Also, from growing the fan base, and I didn't even think about how they are the challenger sport. You know, everybody thinks the big, bad NFL here in the States. You know, across the pond, it's a challenger sport. Super smart of the league to use that, as well as the neutral sites games, as a 1-2 punch to grow kind of the international fandom.
You know, we're going to see that in 2028 in the Olympics in Los Angeles when you see these flag football athletes from around the world competing.
Hey, the really cool part as we wrap up here on Skin in the Game was kind of the untold story of Troy Vincent and the master's degree he received from Ralph Wilson over the tuna melt sandwich.
Yeah, Danny's restaurant, yeah, so. In Orchard Park. I hadn't heard that story before. Yeah, what a great mentor. You get the owner of the team coming out, plucking you off the field on a golf cart.
Right.
Saying, time to talk, buddy.
Right.
Love it. And that says so much for both men. And
as Troy mentioned, it was so important. And for him, the key was, you know, surround yourself by the right people, right? Be a sponge around people you can learn from. And he has played for and played with a Hall of Fame class, both on and off the field. So if there's a takeaway for any of our younger listeners, surround yourself by the right people. You know, you are the company you keep, and Troy did a really great job of keeping the right company in his career.
Yeah, and he still does, and now he's one of those people for others. So can't thank him enough for joining us.
Yeah. No, and thanks for bringing him in. And I want to thank all of you for listening to this week's Skin in the Game, and look forward to having everyone back for some really interesting conversations over the next few weeks. This is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thanks for listening.